Off top, the great Benjamin Franklin, the guy on a $100 bill. Probably know him for doing lots of really impressive things and writing lots of really impressive books and thoughts and theories and discoveries. But bet you probably didn't know he wrote a book titled Fart Proudly. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
All right, Charlie. Did I get you on that one? Is that new? New
Oh
information to you?
yeah. Oh yeah.
Google that, and it's exactly what you think. Like it's not, or you might think it's like some funny title that means something different. No, it's a book about the importance of tooting from your man Benjamin Franklin. But anyway,
You can still buy it on Amazon.
yeah, I might cop that thing, read it. But anyway, all right. So if I were to write a book, or if you and I together were to write a book, I think it would be The Ills of the Professionalizing of Sports. I don't know. We need a better title, but I feel like everything that we talk about lately is somehow connected to, at least the things that we complain about are somehow connected to the professionalization of sports. And I guess not professionalization is the wrong word. Corporatization is the word that we've been using because professional sports have always been professional. And college sports have not always been professional, but they've been professional for as long as you and I have been watching and caring about it. And that had its own problems, but I think the corporatization of it recently has brought up so many other problems. And we've talked about them in other episodes, all the different avenues or areas where it becomes an issue. But right now, I think it's around college coaches, and we're looking at Rick Pitino and Ed Cooley. So Pitino is the new coach at new. He's 71, so I can't call him new. He is the coach at St. John's now. He was at Iona before that. He was in Greece. Why do you have to go to Greece, you ask? Because he had a lot of scandals surrounding his team's NCAA violations, but I think the more prominent ones were his sexual behaviors with his equipment manager's wife at Louisville that led to him being extorted and eventually led to him leaving his job. So,
Nailed the dismount, unlike Patino.
just in case you guys forgot, my man LJ is here, my 12-year intern. So I guess we need to be careful around these things. But I feel like 12-year-olds these days know a lot more things. Like I'm never surprised by my 12-year-old daughter, like what she knows and what she information she has access to. It's like, and then I think back when I was 12, like I mean, I knew a lot more than I wanna pretend like my kids know at this age. Like the music I was listening
Oh
to,
yeah.
the jokes me and my friends were saying, the things we were lying to each other about doing. But anyway, yeah, we'll bring LJ on later and he can answer all these uncomfortable questions and we'll put it on the internet and he can tell us how he feels about or what information he has access to and what he knows. But anyway, back to Rick Pitino and Ed Cooley. So maybe I shouldn't put Ed Cooley in the same category as Rick Pitino. They're slightly different, but I
Yeah.
think that they're responding to this current situation in a way that I think is concerning. So if you don't know, Ed Cooley is, or not concerning, but eye-opening, I guess. Ed Cooley is the head coach of Georgetown Hoyas right now. He was the coach of Providence for 12 years, where he did an outstanding job. Honestly, he's from Rhode Island, and he built that program into something. He promised that he would never leave, and they believed it. Because he was a Providence kid and he was like, this is where I want to be. But the interesting thing about his story is the team wasn't bad this year. And it seemed like they kind of fell off a cliff around the same time that he was being tampered with by the Georgetown Hoyas, which is.
Yeah, ignominious Zillow listing of his house weeks ago before the deal was inked with Georgetown.
And they fell off a cliff as far as their play is concerned. And there was I saw one of the reports showed that he had signed some real estate documents on March 3rd, which suggests that he had already had, I don't know how long it takes, but it probably takes more than a week or two, maybe even a month to get comfortable with a job that you're going to take. I would say, especially if you've been somewhere for 12 years. So I would guess that he had had his mind made up. or was at least entertaining the idea of going to Georgetown well before he signed the document on March 3rd, which was before their season was over. And so immediately season's over, he goes and he joins Georgetown. Now, Providence is upset. Their fans are upset. The team is upset. The state of Rhode Island is probably upset. And so I guess what it just makes me think of is how college coaches were. And I think it's in part because he's taking the Georgetown job, which here means something a little different than I think it does nationally, because it's John Thompson. And John Thompson senior represented something to Georgetown and represented something to college basketball that we
and
don't...
to Ed Cooley, who's spoken of how much John Thompson means to him and meant to him.
Yeah. And it's something that I think a lot of coaches perform, but we don't have anymore in college sports. And it's this like, I'm trying to be careful. So call me out if I'm romanticizing a time in the past because we're no longer there, or if I'm inflating who he was or what he did because we didn't have access to as much information back then. But it seemed like the stories about John Thompson and the way that we think about John Thompson, I guess it doesn't matter whether this is true or false. It's the perception of John Thompson was a lot closer to how we perceive like the TV version of a high school coach, where he's kind of like an extension of your family. He's like your dad away, and he's the guy who's teaching you the importance of competition, but the importance of everything else, like all the way back to the stories about him, like frankly, providing the only place where Allen Iverson could turn his life around. Him standing up to local drug dealers to protect his team. Like, these are stories that people tell about Big John, and stories that exist and perpetuate this idea that your coach is going to be more than a coach. And he was at Georgetown for, I don't know, I guess he probably coached somewhere before Georgetown, but from the time I was born, I guess they were in the finals in 83, right? That's when Jordan hit that shot against Georgetown. Was he the coach? He was the coach then too, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
I was born in 83. He was at Georgetown in some capacity until he died.
From 1972 to 1999.
Whew. That's when he was coaching, but he still stayed there as he had an office and did some ceremonial roles, but actually probably wasn't ceremonial. He was still making some big decisions, which included getting his son hired. And I think like Patrick Ewing got the job in part because he was connected to John Thompson. So like Georgetown's been looking to replace this John Thompson figure, and they're never going to do it. And I don't know that it's now, this is where I feel strongly. It's not because none of the men who are doing this job now are as strong a man as John Thompson or as good a people as John Thompson. But I think this goes to the corporatization of the game, and that it's an environment that for you to succeed, you are going to have to be, I'll put it kindly and say a politician. If I'm being more honest, I'll say a liar. Like it's just, you just kind of have to accept that they're going to be lying to you. And that's where Ed Cooley comes into this picture, where like he told them he was going to be there for life. And maybe you could say that circumstances changed in a new opportunity game, or you could say that he never meant it. He just said it because that was the thing that you're supposed to say. That's what I would probably expect, because right now the other person in this conversation is Rick Pitino. And we all kind of accept that he's like a fast talking New York liar who's not going to stay at your organization for any longer than a better opportunity pops up. So I don't know. I feel like there's a lot there. I did not come with some big grandiose thesis at the end, but I think it's also like we have to accept that this is the sport, and it's frustrating. I think what makes it more uncomfortable for me is I want to fight against the corporatization of all this stuff because I think it makes it less fun. But I also just wish that for college sake, we could completely lean into it, because we still are in a world where the players are not getting paid, and we have to act like they aren't employees and act like they aren't they don't have lasting physical ailments that are not covered by health insurance because technically they aren't employees. Like all that stuff in football and basketball is real. And it makes it harder. It's not something. So all the fans are upset at Providence, but the players who went there because they thought they were going to be playing for this guy who said he'd be there forever. Like those players, what's going to happen to them? What's going to happen to their careers, their lives, their decisions, like all that stuff weighs into it. And yeah, like I said, I don't think I have some big proclamation that makes me feel good about putting this in a neat little bow, but just laying it out on the table that you got politicians, like tall politicians who can hoop, is really what basketball coaches have become. And I don't know that I like it. I don't like it.
I'm going to go the other way. I love this. I love all of this. The dichotomy of Rick Pitino and Ed Cooley. And got three words for you, Foxworth. Big East, four words, is back. And let me tell you why. Okay, so the Ed Cooley stuff is really interesting in how it's been perceived. There's a debate online about, as there is always now, how mad Providence fans should be. And I'm fine with Providence fans being upset because Ed Cooley was there for 12 years. They made the tournament seven times. They won three tournament games. Georgetown came in and they have won two conference games in the last 2 years. The program has fallen below what it should be as a looming East Coast blue blood. And they said, we got a little bit more money. We have prestige and we can bring you in and try and win national championships. So guess what, Providence? You get to be DePaul again. You get to go 16-16 every year and maybe make a tournament run. And we're going to be your big brother. And he's the first coach ever to leave in conference and go to a rival. So that's sitting there. The thing beyond that is that we got to see Ed Cooley's feelings sort of marinate and percolate in real time. He's going on local radio hits being like, oh, you know, sometimes change is good, but I want to be here forever. And he's talking to the AD. And we got to see someone who's ostensibly someone a lot cleaner than Rick Pitino struggle with the fact that the business means he's not. And then you got Rick Pitino on the other side, who is, his son went to Georgetown and graduated in 2012. He's dying to have that job. He says he's going to coach for 10 more years and he is the best coach in college basketball. And he's like, you know what? Forget about Georgetown. They don't want me. I'm going to go to St. John's, be in New York City. They're going to put my face on the side of the Garden and billboards of me in Times Square. And I'm going to make the proclamation that we're not playing in our stadium anymore. St. John's basketball is playing in the Garden. You're worried about our best player, Soriano, transferring? Guess what? I'm making him captain day one. And to me, it's like he is so into the snake oil salesman college basketball thing that it's probably going to work because he's still the best coach in the country. And what's interesting to me is like the Big East, when we were kids, it was right there with the ACC. The Big East tournament was, sorry, LJ, bleeping iconic. I bleep myself there. You know, five overtime games, et cetera, et cetera. And what happened with conference realignment is it started being about Xavier and Marquette, and it was the big Midwest. Well, now New York City and Washington, D.C. and the rivalry with D.C. and Providence are back. Yeah. And that's bringing the East Coast media back into it. That's bringing the media back into it. And the thing that's sitting behind all of this is we just watched the last emerging blue blood in college basketball be Villanova until Jay Wright left because he was so bored with the lack of competition. Jay Wright built that program by driving down 95, going to Bender Arena for the WCAC championship game and saying, I want that guy. I want that guy. I want that guy. And if people might not realize this nationally, but you think of recruiting breeding grounds.
This is the best one.
South Florida for football, West Texas for football. They aren't close to what DC to Baltimore is. That 43-mile stretches for basketball. Mm-hmm. You're getting guys who are the third or fourth best player on WCAC teams, who are impact college players. You're getting the Josh Harts, the Mikhail Bridges, the Sadiq Bays, guys from like the Marcus Gignards from O'Connell who end up at Carolina. And to basically be sitting on that program and have it leave DC is the opportunity for Ed Cooley. It's the opportunity for Rick Pitino. And you hope that could even bring Jay Wright back to Villanova. Like Kyle Neptune took that job and became a 500 team. And so just bringing drama and sleaze and fun back to the Big East, I love it. Corporate, but I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I'm with you on that point. We had a similar conversation a couple of days ago about Dylan Brooks It's like Dylan Brooks is largely annoying, but I have to be honest, he's entertaining.
Yeah.
Like I like that he has personality and that like bucks against the corporatization and the uniformity of all the players. So I appreciate that. And I can't disagree with you. The Big East has gotten more interesting. However, I think what bothers me, and this is more in watching Rick Pitino's press conference than anything, or just watching him do any interviews. It's like, I just wish we could not lie. But I guess that's the point why I said you're politicians, because we all know that all politicians are lying, but we are not big enough to accept that. Like we want to be lied to.
Rick Pitino without lying is like me breathing underwater. It's not going to happen.
But I guess I wish that we could live in a place where they could be honest about this. They could, because like, I think that trickles all the way down. And I guess the only thing, honestly, is just that he's annoying. And I'm probably looking for some way to be upset about this thing that I shouldn't be upset about. But what I end up falling back on often is like, we let them do whatever they want and get all the money and lie to us. And the players are still like being exploited. And that bothers me. And watching Ed Cooley move on for $6 million to a year at Georgetown. And like Georgetown benefits from it. You see how impactful it is when your team goes on a run in a tournament or has a good year in football. Like it impacts the applications that people send in. It impacts the prestige of the school, especially if you can do it for some extended period of time. And that's a big part of, I think, why Georgetown it's really important to them, because they don't have other sports that people care about. They don't even have they have a football team, but they don't play football against other football teams. Like they play I don't know what the word is for it, but it's, anyway, have you ever seen a Georgetown football game? No.
Sadly, I have.
Oh gosh. I'm sorry. But anyway, the point is they've used a lot of black players and black coaches to make this largely white institution seem cool and attractive and something people want to be a part of. And we're getting to a point where the coaches are not being exploited. They're doing the exploiting, but the players are still being exploited. I guess when they're not winning any conference games in the last couple of years, it's hard to say that they're bringing prestige to the program, but you get my point. And then there's Rick Pitino, just Pitino-ing everywhere. It's like, ugh, you can do all this stuff and be all unscrupulous and then show up and try to convince us that you're a trustworthy guy, that you've changed at 71. And now all of a sudden I want to send my kid to play for you, but it probably doesn't matter. He's a good coach, and that's all that really matters.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's just one layer removed because that's the full macro sense of college basketball coaches exploiting the system. But on the Georgetown point, I actually think there is sort of a reckoning, because like Georgetown's in the phylum of Stanford, Duke, Vanderbilt, UVA of like, are we a minor league sports program, or are we going to keep up the charade of an elite institution? And having any sort of scruples is not going to work well with trying to become basically a top minor league basketball program that feeds off of the bed of talent in the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area and becomes a minor league system for the NBA. So seeing how he handles that, that's totally different than the job at Providence, completely different and totally outside of the coaching part of it. And we know Rick Pitino will do that completely fine and excel at that. He'll excel at basically being like, I'm getting you from point A to point B. Yeah. You know, I might be that, untrustworthy guy being like, get in my van that says candy spray painted on the side, kids, but I'm going to get you there. I will prepare you like Donovan Mitchell to be ready for the NBA.
Yeah, Donovan Mitchell's great, by the way. I think he put up a big night the other night in Cleveland. We have to give them some respect, but I'm going to bring LJ in a second to tell us who he thinks is going to win the NBA Finals. We'll use that to move us into NBA conversation. But before we do that, I just wanted to just kind of close it out with this thought, is that if we're being completely honest about college sports, it is like a gross output of the evolution of sports. It's like the minor league system should not be in college. Like it just shouldn't be. There's no reason to have schools affiliated with this, because that's where it all like falls apart for me, is that And I think we're the only country that really does that. That like this, the feeder system for the NFL are colleges. Like that's, to me, that seems absurd. And that's where trying to mix those things is where you get into these uncomfortable places where your top state employee or your top paid state employee in all states is your college football and basketball coach. Like that should not be the case. And I don't know, the proper solution to it is something that you, that we'll never get to, but it's separating them and letting them operate
like academies in Europe, like the soccer and tennis academies.
Yeah, that I'm sure there are issues of exploitation in that too, but I think that separating them, and it does, they don't have to be funneling systems to one particular club like they do in Europe, but like the having this connected with colleges is, to me, feels like the incentives are not properly aligned to have either the college behave in the way that it's supposed to behave or the teams behave, and especially the coaches behave in the way it's supposed to be, they're supposed to behave. But
well, it also, to me, it's no longer the same incentive for the players either, because the joy of March Madness is in the regular season college football is the chaos and the intensity and the fact that every game is like life or death for these kids, because you lose once in the college football season, you're out. You lose once in the single elimination tournament, you're out. Well, now if these games are having their value diminished, and also the incentive structure changes for players when you see sitting out bowl games or not coming back for the NCAA tournament, et cetera, et cetera. With that said, I love it. More sleazeball coaches come back. I need my Thursday and Friday, the second weekend of March, to be elite every single year. So don't listen to us.
Yeah, no, I love it too. I wouldn't want it to change, but I think I also love my iPhone. And like, I can be honest about all the problems with that and all. Yeah, I don't know.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/DF today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DF.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish, shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur, Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Oh, well, let's transition to a young, bright-eyed kid with more optimism than us. What's happening, LJ? You got fans out there. People was tweeting about how well you did last week, man. Congratulations. Or earlier in the week.
Thank you.
All right, so now you got to come out with some Stephen A. Smith level hot takes, which, just for the listeners out there, LJ, who is a big sports fan, gets lots of alerts on his phone from ESPN.com, the AAU basketball player, plays baseball and soccer right now, just a real sports junkie. Didn't know who Stephen A. Smith was, so that is important to have out there in the world. Now tell us who you think is going to win the NBA Finals.
So I think that the Celtics are going to win the NBA Finals for multiple reasons. They have a great duo of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Great bench, pretty good record right now, and great defense. That's not who I want to win the NBA Finals, but that is who I think.
Oh, I like this. I like it. All right, who do you want to win the finals?
I want the Grizzlies to win.
Oh, curveball. All right, so next to, I assume Ja's your favorite player. Next to Ja, who's who's the favorite? Dylan Brooks, you're a Dylan Brooks guy. You look like you like to cause trouble.
Yeah, I like Dylan. Yeah, I like Dylan.
All right, Charlie, rip it apart, man. Tell him why he's wrong. This is the debate TV program of my internship.
So you're still feeling good about this Celtics team that's fallen off a cliff on offense, is a totally different defensive team when Robert Williams is injured, might need to bench Marcus Smart down the stretch. Jaylen Brown is talking about playing for a different team. Any concerns?
He said he was going to switch after the end of the season.
There you go.
A couple years.
Just need 1 year. All right, Charlie. So I think the East is interesting. Yeah. It's getting more. So the East is interesting, and the West has gotten a little bit more interesting, sadly, because we lost Paul George to the Clippers. But I think this morning, LJ and I were talking about the Cavs, too, which I had to fess up and say that I thought it was a mistake to go after Donovan Mitchell, because I didn't think he was going to be like a huge difference maker I just thought the style of play, like a bad defensive player who's a shoot first guard, who's a little bit undersized, wouldn't pan out for this team. And they look great in the regular season. Big win last night. So is there any chance they come out of the East, or is Giannis going to mow through them, which is my belief?
LJ, what do you think?
I think they have a chance, but still, I think that Giannis also. So I think Giannis could beat them. Yeah. Or Bucks.
That's all year I was with you, LJ. I thought the Celtics were the best team, and I thought it was like pretty clear. And the Bucks, I'm not sure what the record is now, but as of a few days ago, it's 25-2 in their last 27. And Giannis is, to quote Dominique Foxworth, Giannis Antetokounmpo is terrifying. That's my pick. On the Cavs one, I think it's like really interesting that Evan Mobley, Donovan Mitchell part of it is obviously fascinating. They have two scoring guards in Garland and Garland and Mitchell that can basically score from any spot on the floor in crunch time, even though Mitchell's numbers are up and down. But Mobley basically took like a mini leap after the All-Star break and has been so dominant on both ends of the floor, figuring out how to score and pass. And like, we haven't seen it and he's still very slight, but in theory, that's the type of guy you'd want guarding Giannis Antetokounmpo. No one can, but in theory, 6'11", switchable freak.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were talking about their record. It's actually the best, I think, right now. They are 51-20, which is the best, right? Yeah, it's the best.
We didn't bring up Jaren Jackson. We'll talk about him when we go back to the West. But yeah, Evan Mobley, he's one of those guys I think that we don't know what his ceiling is just yet.
Don't even know the sound of his voice. He hasn't had the full NBA breakthrough.
He is incredibly impactful on both sides of the floor. It's probably unfair of me to consider this Donovan Mitchell's team, but we all kind of do consider it his team, even though he just got there. And Evan Mobley is probably the more valuable asset or valuable player or more unusual, hard to find, more important player for this team making a championship run. It's going to be on the specialness of Evan Mobley, not Donovan Mitchell. So it's probably focusing on the guy on the perimeter who's scoring all the points is probably not wise. But yeah, I like the Cavs moving into this. But I think Giannis changed my mind when he hyperextended his knee and then went for a 60 the next game. I was like, all right, That's my guy. Until proven otherwise, I have a hard time picking against them, especially when they're healthy.
Yeah, I don't think that the Cavs have it because they have to also go against the Celtics and the Bucks. So.
Yeah. And I might feel really dumb writing off the Celtics because of a mini swoon when they're going to probably be the three seed. But like, yeah. I just, when you sort of get to a point in the NBA playoffs where I feel like you look across the court and you see Giannis there and he's taken the throne of what LeBron was from 2007 to 2020, where it's like, we got to beat that dude seven times. That's impossible.
Yeah. With especially with Robert Williams, I don't know what version of him they're gonna get, but I don't think he's gonna be healthy throughout the playoffs because he hasn't been healthy since he's been in the league. So you're not gonna beat anybody if you don't have the anchor of your defense. You're not gonna go deep if you don't have the anchor of your defense there. All right, let's go to the West real quick before we wrap up. Jaren Jackson, I left him off. He should be up there. He's going to be defensive player of the year, right, Charlie? You think that's probably
him or Brooke Lopez now? They seem to be like together in the odds.
Yeah, Brooke Lopez, fantastic rim defender. But I don't know. I feel like Jaren has a little bit more versatility. But is he was leading the league in blocks at one point. I don't know if he still is, but it's irrelevant. I think the one thing last week, I really wanted to talk about the Clippers because I was watching the Clippers and I was really starting to believe in them, despite the fact that LJ was pointing out to me that their offense is kind of stagnant, which I agree with. But it doesn't matter if it's stagnant when you got a healthy Kawhi Leonard and you have a healthy Paul George. Like, you can have a stagnant offense because the ISO play for them and their decision making is outstanding. And then, of course, the defense with two potentially elite level wing defenders, they're going to be tough. But Paul George had an ugly hyperextension of his knee last night and the season is over. I guess rather than talking about the West, because we've done that before, I'd actually like to talk more about the trade. Like, they went all in on Kawhi and Paul George. Steve Ballmer was building a whole arena. They're going to take LA from the Lakers. With this injury, Charlie, it's gone, man.
This is the most cursed shit I've ever seen in my life. The last time we saw the Clippers in the postseason, Kawhi Leonard was duking it out with Kevin Durant in 2021 as the two best players in the NBA before, you know, Giannis exploded down the stretch. But he blew out his knee. He missed last season. And we aren't, I think because Kawhi has played so infrequently, we've sort of forgotten the fact that basically since January, he's been as good as anyone and he's playing real minutes and he's shooting like he did in 2017 with the Spurs. Like, we've gotten 40%+ from three Kawhi Leonard. Yeah. And we know when it matters just because it looks different. He can guard anyone. But they gave up more for Paul George, I think, in a worse trade than anything ever. Like, the AD trade catches all the flack because we thought the Pelicans were going to be in the Wembanyama sweepstakes. We were calling him A Disney in street clothes. The Clippers are giving up their picks to Oklahoma City in 2024 and 2026. There's a chance that Kawhi and Paul George are decrepit, non-impact players when that second pick comes around.
They haven't done much. LJ, pull your screen down a little bit so we can get your whole face in there. And there you go. Appreciate it. And what do you think about the Clippers? Is that a team that you care about?
Me? I mean,
Kawhi strikes me as someone with very little personality. I mean, strikes me as like he is not an outspoken guy, and he has a New Balance deal, which is like, it ain't Nike. Let's just say that. So I guess just from your perspective, it feels like Kawhi is an incredible, impactful player, but he's not someone who I would say moves the needle necessarily nationally as far as people caring about. So I guess I just wanted to get your perspective on that Clippers team and Kawhi Leonard specifically.
I don't think, like, as they're making the NBA final, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I don't think that. I mean, they have a chance, but it's going to probably be hard because in this division, you have the Grizzlies, the Nuggets, Suns, all contenders that you would need to, you know, go through to win. And I think it's going to be hard for them to do it without Paul George.
Who you got coming out the West?
I don't know. I got to think about that, but.
All right. I'll give you mine. You have to have an opinion. Like, I mean, what are we doing here?
First place is the Nuggets in the West. But, like, I don't think that they can do it. So I'll just say the Grizzlies.
All right, that's what you want. You go with your heart. I like it. I'm with you. Charlie, final determination.
You
want
to go head or heart? Head first.
Both.
Head first, assuming Durant gets healthy. I mean, I actually think we've just sort of overthought the West and how wide open it is. I think Phoenix might just roll everyone if Durant's healthy. Like, they should be unstoppable. In a world where he's not, and LeBron is, I got the Lakers winning the West, baby.
No.
No, not that's
bananas.
No, that, I mean, I can't actually blaspheme that hard in the vein of Stephen A. Smith. No, I think I do think they can win a first round series, but I would genuinely be pretty surprised if Phoenix doesn't come out of the West.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, my heart is with Phoenix because I hate how you guys treat Kevin Durant, another guy who came out.
Hate how you treat Kevin Durant. So unfair.
Another guy who came out of this area who, for some reason, didn't want to go to Maryland and went all the way to Texas. But I think my heart would be with them. But it's impossible to have like a head pick in the West. Like, none of this stuff makes sense. None of it seems right. The Warriors aren't good. And Wiggins ain't back. I guess the Nuggets. I don't know.
No, I mean, the Nuggets are playing terribly. They have the, like.
Yeah, they're like the Celtics.
Honestly, like, slightly worse. Dipping. And, yeah, I mean, I don't can't take the Kings seriously yet. I'm sorry, light the beam. It's awesome. But are they going to outscore everyone when it matters and the pace slows down? And Memphis, we'll see. I mean, they've lost so much of their identity without Steven Adams and Jaren Jackson. And we talked about Dylan Brooks. Him shooting more isn't a good thing. I'm sorry, Dylan Brooks.
Isn't he the one that somebody came up to in the airport a couple of years ago and told him he shoot too much? Do you remember that story? It was after season over. That was him, right?
I'm pretty sure.
I think it was either him or Bane, but I assume it was Dylan.
It was Dylan Brooks.
All right. Well, I probably shoot too much on this show, but whatever, my name's on it. So I can appreciate you, Charlie. Appreciate you, Adi. Appreciate you, Sarah. Appreciate you, Christina. Thank you guys for making another great show. And also, thank you and goodbye to our great intern, LJ Phillips.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.